evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, February 26, 2016. The leader of the SPLM in opposition says he's ready to return home.
I'm ready to go to Juba. JMAC has confirmed and assured me that Juba is demilitarized and that our forces, a minimum force of 1,370, shall be transported.
And teachers and students reject a transfer in Yei.
It doesn't mean it stops work. These are secondary schools, but they are supposed to be transferred by the same. They are not operating in the air. They are operating in the jurisdiction of this county and municipality. And by the virtue of my roles and responsibility, I think that is what I'm supposed to do.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Former rebel leader Riek Machar assured United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon by phone yesterday that he is prepared to return to Juba in March to take up his position as first vice president. The Secretary General met with President Salva Kiir and visited a POC camp in the capital on Thursday. Machar tells VOA's Peter Clotty he is still waiting for the first phase of the security arrangement to be implemented before he returns to Juba.
The Secretary General of the UN, Ban Ki-moon, he actually wanted to know when I would be going to Juba. What I have told him is that I am ready to go to Juba, particularly at this time when the JMAC has confirmed and assured me that Juba is being demilitarized and that our forces, a minimum force of 1,370, shall be transported to Juba. So I have assured him I'm ready to go to Juba. I'm just waiting for the first phase of the security arrangements being put in place.
Following all these meetings with heads of state, have you had a chance of talking to President Salva Kiir in terms of the formation of the unity transitional government that both of you signed the agreement to implement?
Now, this is an issue that cannot be discussed over the phone. I will have to be in Juba, at least once I'm in Juba, and I do consultation with my colleagues and also with the rest of South Sudanese who are interested in the formation of government. Then we'll form it. You can't discuss it on phone.
What is the next step forward? Since now it's tentatively agreed that you will return to Juba, what is the next step forward once you get there?
Once I get to Juba, once we form the government, then we should start discussing. I hope by then President Salva would have suspended the 28 states. Then we would discuss, as is stated in the roadmap, the communique of the IGAD Council of Ministers. Then we would discuss the number of states. I hope we will reach to an agreement because I'm also interested in increment of the state, you see, in a scientific manner, we should discuss and agree. So, but if we fail, we have no choice. We will return to the 10 states. This is one activity. But the major activity would be assuring people of South Sudan that peace has come, and which would mean stability, political stability, and security is maintained. And then now we can address issues such as the IDPs, which are in the UNMISS protection centers.
Local leaders in Jonglei State's Bor County say suspected cattle raiders from the new Boma State attacked a passenger vehicle, killing one passenger and injuring four others yesterday. They say the vehicle was attacked at Chwe Nyok village in Bor while transporting 11 passengers to Jalipayam, 26 kilometers from Bor town. As Jacob Achek reports for VOA from Bor, Boma State officials deny the attackers were from their area.
Eyewitness says the vehicle was ambushed yesterday by suspected raiders in Chwe Nyok, 8 kilometers from Bor town. 37-year-old Manyong Nyop's shoulder was broken during the attacks and is being treated at Bor Civil Hospital. He described what happens.
That day, when we went from here, we were about to reach Shuinyuk. They came across in front of the car. I told the driver that these are robbers. He asked me, where are they? I said, these ones near here. The driver asked me if we can turn, but I said, it's too late. Go straight through them. The moment we went straight to them, they fired at us. I was with the driver in the front seat. They shot at me, shot another old woman who died. And the driver went straight without stopping. They kept shooting at us from behind the car.
Bor County Commissioner Isaac Mameruk says the attackers are from communities in Buma Estate. He says preliminary investigations by security personnel indicate that the attackers were cattle raiders from the Murle community.
When we had the incident, immediately I sent security police to the site to go and make some police studies about the incident. According to eyewitnesses in the car, they were saying that we were shot by the Murle. So this is what was happening.
Rook encouraged residents to remain calm, saying authorities are doing all they can to secure the area. Another victim of the attacks, Nyalwang Adwodjok, was returning to her village for the first time since she flew the area when fighting broke out in 2013. She was displaced to Nimili in 2013. Speaking in Dinka, Adwod says she is not discouraged by the attacks.
I returned from Nomuli trying to go back home. I want to go back and clean my home so that I can return to my life there. I'm not happy to stay outside my village. I better die in my homeland. It was when was returning home that I can sustain the injuries. When we reached Ayo, I saw them approaching us from the road junction. When drivers start negotiating to them in the corner, that was the place which they had shoot us.
Buma Estate Coordinator Gabriela Makori strongly denied the attackers are from the Murle community.
I do not hear anything about this incident. And I have no any idea about any movement of the criminals from Buma Estate to Bor. With the end of last time, the problem was just concentrating around the Bor.
Yesterday's attacks on a passenger vehicle was the first of its kind in the Bor area. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
As fighting in the Pibor area continues, French medical charity Médecins Sans Frontières says the only healthcare facility in Pibor has been damaged and looted. MSF says they have treated more than 30 people wounded during the fighting. MSF's head of mission says heavy gunfire forced MSF staff to evacuate their compound and move to Onmis base where they continue to treat the wounded.
Unfortunately, we cannot reach the people who went to the bush. So far, we don't have the access, but we are sure that they are busy with medical assistance and medical assistance. So the situation right now is quite a concern regarding the people and the access from the medical care, but also in terms of food and hygiene as well. The water access is a concern as well for us.
And earlier this week, MSF reported that you were treating 35 wounded. There was about 1,000 people who were displaced as a direct result of the fighting. Are there any updated figures as far as people who are wounded as well as displaced populations?
So far, since Tuesday, indeed, we have more than 1,000 displaced people in the UN compound. Most of them are children. So what we start to do is to set up a clinic and then we provide medical care to all these displaced.
And what types of injuries is MSF treating? Are these gunshots? Are they knife wounds? What is your team seeing in the hospitals of Pibor?
Currently, following the fighting that happened on Tuesday, most of the wounded who arrived for protection and care in the UN compound are most of them gunshots.
And to your knowledge, is the fighting still going on, or have matters sort of quieted down since the fighting broke out earlier this week?
The fighting calmed down, which is a good thing for all of us. And then we can try to go back to our health facility, because so far the security didn't allow us to go back to the hospital.
That was MSF head of mission Corinne Banizek speaking to Ayen Bior from Juba on that terrible phone line. Authorities in the newly created Yei River State yesterday blocked a decision by Yei River education officials to transfer teachers to three secondary schools after students and teachers rejected the move. As VOA fellow Tito Justin reports from Yei, the State Ministry of Education inspector for secondary school says the transfer was put on hold indefinitely after students went on a rampage.
Teachers in the Ministry of Education are transferred to a different schools every 3 years, but most teachers complain that their salary is not enough to provide for accommodations in their new schools. Juma Hillary Elisa teaches biology in Yei Day Secondary School and has been transferred to three different schools within his 6 years of teaching. Hillary says he deserves a pay rise.
I don't feel good. You know, when you are transferred, there must be grading to give you morale, so that you don't remain stagnant. You cannot just be transferred like that.
Yei Day Secondary School students are not happy with the decision to transfer their teachers. Stella Julia Obede is the head girl of the school. She says the students are not comfortable learning from new teachers.
We doesn't want our teachers plus the HM to be transferred, because our headmaster has promised us that he wanted to do for us in this school. He did not fulfill his promise.
The student Evans Wani Joel says he fears most students will fail in their final examinations because of the changes. The decision by the Minister of Education has affected 8 teachers in Yei Day Secondary School. David Lumuri, the head teacher of the school, says he does not accept his transfer. Lumuri says the creation of the 28 states has put everything in South Sudan on hold.
In Juba, promotions, transfers and everything was suspended. There are no things taking place in Juba. And then in here, it is our surprise that the transfer is affected here, and then during this crucial time whereby taking about only from Yei town to Yei girls, a teacher cannot afford. We are not resisting any transfer, but the conditions cannot allow some of us to undergo this transfer.
Yei River State Education Inspector for Secondary Schools Emmanuel Sebit says the creation of new states has nothing to do with the teachers' transfer.
It doesn't mean it stops work. These are secondary schools, but they are supposed to be transferred by the state. They are not operating in the air. They are operating in the jurisdiction of this county and municipality. And by the virtue of my roles and responsibility, I think that is what I'm supposed to do.
The mayor of Yei Municipality, Bidal Kosomas Wori Kojo, issued a statement cancelling all transfer of other government staff in Yei. This comes a day after the new governor of Yei State, David Lokonga, formed his state government by appointing 7 ministers. Sebit says teachers and other civil servants should stay away from politics and concentrate on teaching students. There are currently 20 secondary schools in Yei. The new date to transferring state civil servants is yet to be announced. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Yei.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, an influential council of elders in South Sudan are criticized in an open letter. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think Africa should become one big country? Why? Why not?
I don't think Africa should become one big country, because I think smaller countries is easier to govern and to rule.
No, it is impossible. Because now, even in a one state, you would find that it is very difficult for the leaders to manage the one country. So if the whole continent became a one state, it would be impossible for them to manage or to lead it.
If it's going to be headed by one political leader and there's going to be free border and people can move from one place to another easily, I think it's going to be good. It's going to foster investment.
No, I don't think Africa should become one big country. We are too diverse in our culture and way of thinking, and one big country will create chaos.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The Sudan government is preparing to hold a referendum in the restive Darfur area. The referendum is to give the people of Darfur a chance to decide whether Darfur should remain as one region or become three states. The Darfur Referendum Commission says it will start voter registration in April. The Darfur region had been an independent state but joined Sudan in 1916. In 1983, it was divided into three states, North Darfur, South Darfur, and West Darfur. Ahmed Fodul is Sudan's state minister and spokesman of the former Rebels of the Liberation and Justice Movement, who signed the Doha Darfur Peace Agreement.
The government of Sudan is supporting the current situation for Darfur to stay as five separate states, whereas our party, which is Liberation and Justice National Party, we are adopting situation of region.
Sudan government signed the Doha Peace Agreement with former Rebels of Liberation and Justice Movement and Liberation and Justice Party. Taj Ad-Din Bashir Niam is the Minister of Construction Development and Secretary of the Liberation and Justice Party. He says his group is advocating for Darfur to remain as five states.
In these referendums, all of them, they are in the camps, refugees and IDPs, and also in the confined in the main cities in Darfur and so on.
Many Darfur rebel groups rejected the idea of referendum. Mini Arko Minawe is the leader of the Darfur Sudan Liberation Movement. He says referendum is not a solution to the Darfur problem. Mini is demanding that Darfur becomes an independent state. He says the government in Khartoum is not transparent and should not be trusted to carry out referendum exercise.
They are going to do the referendums not because of the peace, but because of the leaking the ballots, that as they did in the last elections of the 2015 and before the elections of the 2010. And that is what they are doing. It is just the reeking of the desire of the people of Darfur.
Sudanese in the diaspora demonstrated in front of the White House last week to pressure U.S. President Barack Obama to take action against reports of human rights violations in Darfur. Aid agencies say as of 21st February, over 90,000 internally displaced people were displaced from Jebel Mara because of conflict. VOA fellow Nadia Taha prepared this report from Washington. The Academy Award ceremonies, also known as the Oscars, will be held Sunday night in Hollywood, the center of American filmmaking. This year, the Academy has often been criticized for a lack of racial diversity among the nominees. There are also those who believe that American movies often portray Africa and Africans in a shallow and stereotyped way. VOA's Philip Adams spoke with the Nigerian novelist and social commentator Elnathan John for his take on Africa Hollywood style.
One 2015 Hollywood film that has created some controversy in Africa is Concussion, a sports drama starring Will Smith. Smith plays the real-life Nigerian pathologist Bennett Omalu. He fought the National Football League's efforts to quash his research into the severe brain injuries players can sustain while playing professional football over the long term.
I found a disease that no one has ever seen. Repetitive head trauma chokes the brain. They have to listen to us. This is bigger than they are.
When Nigerian writer Elnathan John first heard that accent, he winced.
The main character, the doctor, actually has a weird accent that if he paid any attention or if anybody knew anything about Nigeria would have picked up. Any Nigerian would tell you this. It's a Nigerian guy trying to make himself intelligible to Americans. Actually, he sounded like a Nigerian with a concussion.
John responded by satirizing the accent in a video he posted on YouTube. That caught the attention of Will Smith, who took the critique in good humor. But John cites other examples where he feels Africans are misrepresented by Hollywood. He says Morgan Freeman got it wrong when speaking as Nelson Mandela in the biopic Invictus.
This is no time to celebrate petty revenge. This is the time to build our nation. You elected me your leader. Let me lead you now.
Oh, that was difficult to listen to. Really difficult. Mostly because Nelson Mandela has a very peculiar accent. And if you bungle that, everyone can see. And he's too big a figure to have his accent bungled. And, you know, it goes back to that. You know, he's a big figure, he's African, no one will notice the difference. If we get a big popular guy to play, it doesn't really matter. If he comes really close, it'll be fine, it's Africa, right?
This situation puzzles and even angers John, who says Hollywood takes care to distinguish between the languages and cultures of Western peoples.
When there's a movie about Ireland, for example, or the IRA, people make attempts to find an Irish actor. And they make a distinction between a Belfast accent and a Dublin accent. It makes me sad that the same is not extended to Africa, and Africa is this large monolith where people sound alike.
John believes this sloppiness may be a mostly American phenomenon. Americans tend to see their nation as a world power whose culture is both exportable and sufficient unto itself.
I would not say that it's done maliciously. If world news is our news, then where's the motivation to go further? But it is the job of the media and filmmakers and all of that to bring these other cultures to the people. People will consume what they're given. So the burden is on those who have the skills to dig out what is fact from fiction, what is real from what is generic.
John remembers attending a global media conference in Germany last year, attended by highly placed executives at the BBC, Deutsche Welle, CNN, and other international broadcasters. John was one of a handful of African attendees and asked the panel why there was such a dearth of African news and information from those outlets.
One guy said, I'll be honest with you, no one really cares. Africa is not that sexy, you know. It's good for sound bites, good for a bit of violence, something sexy to push the news. But people are really interested. And this is what he says. And that's why it's easy for people to get away with these stereotypes, I think.
John says shallowness and stereotypes limit the subject matter and overall storylines, both real and fictional, that media tell about Africans.
And so when we have lots and lots of violence and wars and child soldiers and rape, and killing, it adds to this image and it makes for these one-dimensional characters and it dehumanizes Africans.
This trend is playfully countered in the YouTube video produced by Mama Hope, a community development NGO with projects in Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, and Ghana. The video, which has been viewed nearly 2 million times, features four wholesome-looking young men. Here is an edited excerpt.
Do you know who we are?
If you've only seen us in Hollywood movies, this is what you might think of us.
Machine guns!
When you run out of bullets, we shoot rocket launchers.
We are obsessed with violence.
But you don't really think of us that way, do you?
We are likable and friendly guys.
We are more than a stereotype.
Let's change the perception.
The economies of African nations are on the rise, and with them, their visibility on the global stage, both as markets and as purveyors of culture. Nigerian novelist L. Nathan John hopes this will bring about a newfound respect for the rich cultural and linguistic diversity Africans can offer, the stories they tell, and the stories that others can tell about them. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is today's recap with South Sudan in Focus, editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. Former rebel leader Riek Machar assured United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon by phone yesterday that he is prepared to return to Juba, the capital, in March to take up his position as first vice president. The Secretary General met with President Salva Kiir and visited staff and IDPs at a United Nations-run protection of civilian site camp in the capital yesterday. Bon also called Machar to ask when he would be in Juba so that the transitional government of national unity can be formed. Machar says he is still waiting for the first phase of the security arrangements to be implemented from the peace agreement before returning to Juba. Officials in Jonglei State's Bor County say suspected cattle raiders from the new state of Boma attacked a passenger vehicle, leaving one person dead and injuring four others yesterday. They say 11 passengers were in the vehicle when it was attacked in Bor County, about 26 kilometers from Bor Town. Eyewitnesses say a passenger vehicle was targeted in an ambush carried out by suspected Merle raiders in Chinyuk, 8 kilometers from Bor Town yesterday. 37-year-old Menyuk Nyup's shoulder was broken during the attack. He said the robbers fired on the vehicle and killed an elderly woman in the front seat and continued shooting on the vehicle as they sped off. Bor County Commissioner Isaac Mamer Ruck says Merle tribesmen attacked the vehicle because they were trying to discourage people who have returned to Bor after the peace deal was signed from resettling in their villages. Commissioner Ruck says preliminary investigations by security personnel indicate that the attackers were cattle raiders from the Merle community. And the Sudan government is preparing to hold a referendum in the rest of Darfur area. The referendum is to give people of Darfur an opportunity to decide on whether Darfur should remain one region or three states. The Darfur Referendum Commission says it will start voter registration in April. The Darfur region had been an independent state but joined Sudan in 1916. In 1983, it was divided into three states, North Darfur, South Darfur, and West Darfur. Ahmed Fadol is Sudan's state minister and spokesman of the former Rebels of Liberation and Justice Movement, who signed the Doha-Darfur peace agreement. Fadol says his party supports the referendum. As fighting in the Pibor area continues, French medical charity Médecins Sans Frontières, or MSF, says the only health care facility in Pibor has been damaged and looted. MSF says they've treated more than 30 people wounded during the fighting, and MSF's head of mission says heavy gunfire forced the MSF staff to evacuate their compound and move to the UNMISS base, where they continue to treat the wounded. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with Panchol singing in his native Dinka language.
Ayele kukwanu na miar kiyene kele aya indara miara na ya kawob nengbay paya mukulu yan badyob yinjin ajeng ya dior diyan wotra lenga bin bayu eni jalya ba kedung ya dombi aya indara miara na ya kawob nengbay paya mukulu yan badyob yinjin dinga munyeri bupane jedu bandu a jene jenga kan a jage jen kan ka wefi jenga dor a jai nyara nyara na ya ka wobu nengbay baya mukulu yan kodi obi yinjin bukye galenu wari eikim jipo miar koje kebi aga enyane rike yen a jai nyara nyara na ya ka wobu nengbay baya mukulu yan kodi obi yinjin.
Well, We've been listening to Panchol Deng singing in his native Denka language. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm